You are listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It is Friday, time for our reporter roundtable, when we get you updated on the news that made headlines around our area this last week. And today, our panelists, Mike Sharp with Idaho News 6, Madeline Beck with Boise State Public Radio News, and Margaret Carmel, the Boise City Hall reporter with the Idaho Press. Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday.
Hey, and happy Juneteenth. And speaking of which, Madeline, can you get us started with a rally that some youth are organizing because of Juneteenth?
Right. So yeah, there's a lot of rallies happening around Juneteenth, but one in particular was interesting to the Mountain West News Bureau was a Blackfeet Reservation in Montana is actually doing their own rally in support of Juneteenth and in support of people of color who haven't seen as much as justice from the Justice Department as they believe they deserve. And the Native Americans in much of the Mountain West have stood alongside Black Lives Matter movements for that same reason. A lot of the time, because you have those missing and murdered Indigenous women, as well as some of their own challenges with trying to get different legal problems solved on reservations because of jurisdictional issues. A lot of things just go unsolved. That one's happening up in Montana, but like I said, with Juneteenth, there's a lot of rallies happening around the region right now.
Yeah. And speaking of Juneteenth, but also the Black Lives Matter movement, Mike, you have been following the Black Lives Matter Boise group, and they basically held a rally or a protest basically early this week, really calling for the defunding of police.
Yeah, you're right. The defund police movement obviously is happening across the country and internationally. We sent our reporter Madeline White out to cover the rally that happened at City Hall. They are encouraging new mayor Lauren McClain to make an effort in defunding the police. They have concerns about the amount of funding that is currently in the budget for police. It is by and large, it's largely the largest portion of the budget for the city of Boise. And depending on who you talk to, I think one of the things we're trying to do in covering these events is to talk to as many people as possible to get a feel of where different people are. What we found is it doesn't matter what their sign says, they may view things a little bit differently or be asking for something different than the person who's standing next to them. And we actually interviewed two people who were there together and asked them kind of where their views were on these issues. And it ranges from, you know, some people holding signs are there to literally defund the police. But by and large, the majority of people who are there are asking for a shift in funding, that those funds go to other programs. And even on your show, I've been on the show before talking about the amount of calls that police get that are crisis situations, mental health issues. Mm-hmm. We've talked so many times about that. And police, even last year when I was covering those issues then, we're asking for, you know, some relief in that because they're not the best trained individuals to handle those situations. And some of the arguments that are being made now are to shift those funds where police would be showing up to instead send mental health care workers and individuals who are more trained to handle those crises.
And Mike, within your reporting, I mean, has Mayor McClain said anything about this? What about, I mean, I know we're in transition when it comes to chief of police in Boise, but we do have an acting chief of police. The new chief of police is set to start next week. And, you know, welcome to Boise having to deal with this as the new chief.
Well, so far what I've seen is a lot of politicians and Lauren McClain, Mayor Lauren McClain is not alone in this. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden did the same thing where they kind of answer the straw man argument and say, well, I'm not for defunding police. When in reality, the majority of individuals we've talked to aren't for a full defunding of police in the first place. That's not really the largest group of people who are out there protesting. And that's one thing that the mayor did say is that she wasn't for that. As for, you know, lowering the 28% of the budget, it's $70 million that in the 2020 fiscal year budget that's going to police, there haven't been any of those commitments. Now, one of the things that I have heard is that there are different organizations that are doing different things. There is a group that is open or trying to have conversations with the mayor, trying to have larger conversations about what these policies will look like. And then there are other groups that they believe that the activity of protesting is what gets their thoughts across, and they want to kind of disrupt. And I don't mean that in a negative way. They're trying to get the word out and do what they can to show that this is an issue. And so it's hard to say whether or not there's one large voice that's getting across to Lauren McLean, the mayor at this point, but there are a lot of voices.
And Margaret, I mean, you cover Boise City Hall. And so I'm just curious to know what if anything, you've heard about this within the walls of City Hall, or maybe you haven't, maybe it hasn't come up.
I haven't heard very much. I'll say that a really telling experience that I had this week with covering Boise City Hall was I was watching a listening session that Mayor Lauren McLean had, and she over Zoom, and she was sitting in her office and she was answering questions. And as she was answering a question from someone about why they won't defund the police, you could hear defund the police protesters yelling outside of City Hall in the background. I think that really speaks to where we are right now. I haven't heard anything specific from city council members, although city council president Elaine Clegg did allude to the fact that maybe she wanted to have some more conversations about moving funds around to social programs and other things as we get further into the budget process, but I have not heard anyone say defund the police. I have not heard anyone talk specifically about that. My best guess is that what city council would want to do is maybe beef up some funding for social programs, but I doubt they would actually cut. I don't sense a political will to cut the police budget in order to make that happen.
Right. You know, one of the things that I think is important to note specifically with the city of Boise is we have done quite a bit of coverage as part of our Finding Hope series, delving into mental health and these crisis situations. And one of the things that they have been working on long before this most recent push to shift this funding is they have had civilians who have been going on some of these calls. They have been trying some things that I haven't heard necessarily that a broad amount of police departments across the country are doing in involving civilians who are more trained and equipped to handle those crisis situations. So it'll be interesting to see if whomever had the ear of the last person to initiate that activity, if they're also being vocal and if they're going to be involved in this process.
Mm-hmm. And Madeline, go ahead, Margaret.
I said something else I'd just like to note really quick. City Council had a discussion on their work session this week about use of force, and they pretty heavily promoted it, saying it would be a discussion and really wanting media attention, to the point that there was actually some confusion where some folks thought it would be a public hearing and they would get to ask questions, but it was really just an informational briefing. And basically, Interim Police Chief Ron Weiniger went down the list of the viral 8 Can't Wait campaign to reduce police violence, which includes things like preventing officers from shooting at moving vehicles, disallowing patrol calls and things like that. And he basically went down the list and said, yep, we already do all of these things. And then that was the briefing from the city. So I think that says a lot about kind of where they are in the use of force conversation. There was no discussion really directly of more radical reforms.
Madeline, can you talk about how quite a few activists are speaking out about harassment during protests that they attend? And I know the Mountain West News Bureau has been covering this. One reason being someone was someone shot at during a protest in New Mexico recently?
Yeah, no, an armed man shot a protester at a demonstration on Monday in Albuquerque, actually. And so there's growing concerns about armed groups coming in and harassing protesters. Some have reported being followed home in trucks and cursed out. Others, you know, have just been said that, you know, this is a general feeling of these people like following after them after protests are over. Even in Missoula, Montana, a Black man was detained by armed men and women at a rally in Missoula, and then they handed him over to police who quickly released him. But that was likely a group of people who thought he was with Antifa. And so this is a growing concern that's really tied to some of those Antifa rumors that the Mountain West News Bureau has also reported on as being false, and that there is no evidence that any of that has occurred or will occur. But these rumors continue to be rampant. And so a lot more armed groups have decided to come and protect their city and protect their people. But it is starting to, we are seeing a lot of threats and a lot of challenges, and then throw into that other groups like far right groups that there has been major concerns about them taking advantage of this to promote violence or that sort of thing, unrest in general. There's a lot of different groups and there's a lot of different rumors out there right now, but for sure, the thing that we know for sure is some people that are protesting are feeling afraid of these armed people who have walked after them and things like that. And I do want to be clear, there are some groups who are, pro Second Amendment groups that do promote Black Lives Matters movement. And are for the protesters. There's a lot of confusion and a lot of fear right now.
Right. And just so many rumors out there too, which just adds to that fear. Margaret and Mike, I know both of you have been covering this, and some fairly big news this week is that unemployment checks are starting to trickle in for some Idahoans, but not everyone. Can you guys get us updated on that? And Mike, maybe I can just start with you.
Yeah, sure. I feel like this is something that over the last 12 weeks or so, you could have said every time. Some of the checks have gone out, some haven't. And you know, as somebody who has survived on unemployment before, I understand that pain. Trying to pay your rent while you're continuously being told that the money's going to come eventually, it's a really, really tough balance. And so there's a lot of frustration there. But one of the things we covered earlier this week was a proclamation signed by Governor Little late last week that opens up some of the stumbling blocks or hurdles that are in the way of releasing some of the funds. They said about $50 million because of this executive order were released, and about 16,000 claimants received their funds released into their bank accounts. So that's huge for those 16,000 claimants, but still there are a lot of people who are left on the lurch waiting to find out, making phone calls and waiting on hold to try to get an answer.
Mm-hmm. And Margaret, talk a little bit about that, because you wrote an article earlier this week still multiple calls to the Department of Labor, still not being returned, still not picking up. I mean, what is going on there? Or frankly, do we even know?
Well, I'll say that it is unknown how many people are still waiting for their claims. I did a story, I think about a month ago, where I caught up with several people that were waiting for unemployment payments, talking about really the imminent financial straits they were in if they could not get their checks. And at that time, I was told that because of their system, the department could not give me a number of how many people were still waiting for payment. I followed up again with some more people waiting for unemployment checks. I tried to contact the Department of Labor to ask them some questions about how things were going, how, if they were able to tabulate how many people we're still waiting, all those questions. I never heard back from their public information officer. I think I called 4 days in a row. You know, but they, you know, have put out several press releases talking about how, you know, new claims are holding steady at this point. And we are hearing more anecdotally, more and more people who've been waiting a long time are getting paid. I talked to two gentlemen this week who said that, yeah, they've been waiting for 12 weeks. And then all of a sudden the money was released to their account this week and they were able to catch up on their bills. I also heard a neighbor of mine in my apartment complex walk by my open window and holler down the street, "Hey, I got my unemployment check." So I think things are starting to open back up, but we still don't know just how much.
Well, and with that being said, Margaret, I mean, you calling the Department of Labor 4 days in a row and not getting any answers or feedback, you know, this is on the shoulders of the Department of Labor. I mean, yes, they have rehired people. You know, they had to go, you know, for people who have retired, they have had to hire people. I understand that this is a heavy lift for them, but this is what they're supposed to do. And none of them are in financial straits. Whereas when you look at 12 weeks with nothing, I mean, Mike, this goes back to this whole idea of now people are trying to make sure they don't get evicted.
Right, right. I think it would be, and I'm sure you said it innocently, but I think it would be unfair to say that none of them are in financial straits. I think such a high percentage of people are affected. I'm sure even—
Well, let me clarify, Mike, maybe not in financial straits, but they haven't lost their jobs.
Right, right. So, you know, you mentioned the fact that people aren't able to pay their rent. People aren't paying their mortgage. We talked to a few experts this week. Madeline White, a reporter, talked to a few experts as part of our rebound series. And one of the things that she said, Deanna Watson with the Boise City Ada County Housing Authorities, told us that right now there are a lot of renters who are kind of giving breaks and people are trying to manage as best they can. But what they're saying is it's a couple months away. And a couple months away, we're going to have just courts filled with these hearings about evictions, because that's where, you know, some of those breaks run out. Some of those people who are renting their homes run out of their funds that they were able to use to give those breaks. And so there are, you know, rental assistance programs and nonprofits who are there to help, but they're not there to help 25% of the population, right? So there's a fear, a third of the population of Idaho rents instead of owns. And so there's a fear that when this all happens, there's going to be a rush to burden this court system. And, you know, the Idaho Housing Finance Association, as I mentioned before, the Boise City Ada County Housing Authorities, they're trying to get the word out as much as possible now to get these phone calls so that people can try to get these funds and manage their money in a way that they won't be evicted in the coming months when some of these programs run out of funds.
Yeah. And then, Madeline, I mean, we're also just, I mean, there's so many domino effects of, you know, everything having shut down in March. And one industry, can you talk to us about hotels and tourism? I mean, I think we've talked a lot about, you know, of course, local businesses like restaurants having to be shut down, but then you kind of broaden that out, right? And we're in the season where people start summer traveling.
Right. And so, yeah, I think just talking with some of the tourism folks here at the Department of Commerce in Idaho, they've said that, you know, the spring months are generally are lull. So, you know, it didn't, when coronavirus shut things down then, it was a little more okay. We're still losing out on a lot of tourism, but it's more okay then. But now we're getting into the serious summer months when we really need that tourism, like that funding. This is a big time for us. And so, yeah, more people are traveling and more people are now traveling between states. Because you don't have to quarantine when you get to a new state anymore. A lot of them are going to rural areas. But of course, that just kind of increases concerns now that we are seeing some more spikes of COVID-19 throughout the region. It looks like Colorado as a state is the only state in the Mountain West that isn't seeing tick back up when it comes to positive COVID cases. So yeah, that's that's kind of where we're at as far as just the hotel slowdowns alone. It looked like, according to this report from the hotel American Hotel and Lodging Association, they expected the Mountain West could lose more than $1.7 billion in state and local taxes. And so that's not chump change. And that's billions of dollars for Idaho and everyone surrounding us in just hotel slowdowns and closures. We'll see what happens going forward. If there are more closures, that could have really big impacts. Mm-hmm. We just don't know right now. And we don't know if there's an appetite for state closures or local closures, even as these numbers grow again for COVID-19.
And Madeline, then we have this whole issue of, and we've seen this before, there were some concerns about certain food shortages as we've been moving through this pandemic. Now there's, what's going on with the price of beef?
Yeah, so that was a bit more of a kind of bigger deal that happened when COVID started. We started seeing a couple different things fluctuate with the beef market, and that is, you saw the packing plants close down. You saw there being a lot of live cattle out there, so cattle prices going down. But then you had fewer meats making it to the stores, so those prices skyrocketed. Now, what some of the claims are and some of the genuine concerns are out there, including now an investigation from the Department of Justice, is that did meatpacking companies actually make it worse? Did they use this time of pandemic to increase the cost of beef in the stores and decrease the live cattle prices by kind of price fixing and potentially working together to do so? It's a very concentrated market, and that investigation is ongoing. But even if the DOJ does not find that there was price fixing in this particular incident, there are now a lot more calls for breaking apart what a lot of people are seeing now is almost a monopolistic, or at least like an oligopoly in that sector.
That's really interesting. Margaret, I want to bring it back around to Boise for a minute. In regards to the new library, I mean, this has been, there's been all kinds of things going on with this, yes. With former Mayor Dave Beter. This was, in fact, I think we could arguably say it was something that Mayor McLean kind of based part of her campaign on, was this idea of, you know, listening to what people wanted. I mean, there was an initiative on the ballot. Where are we now when it comes to
Yeah, so with the library, I think that even before COVID hit, there was a general sense of needing to re-scope the project. Start, and that's code for start over. Ditch world famous architect Moshe Safdie, relook at the project, figure out how to come up with a cheaper way to build it, because that's really what sunk that project, was the outsized, just oversized price tag and the out of control construction market that made it even more expensive to build. But then COVID hit, and that took a huge chunk out of municipal budgets, and it kind of refocused the priorities of the city wanting to fund affordable housing projects and economic recovery stuff and putting money away. And so this week, the City Council and the Library Board of Trustees had a meeting, and they talked about how they want to do a strategic planning process and look at the whole library system and figure out how do they improve it, what is needed, what's the next step, while at the same time hiring a new library director, because the old one retired after it looked like the main library was not going to be built in the fall. And so they're basically kind of starting over from square one. It's not clear when a new main library could be built. And we'll see. The current building is, really old. It's a 1940s warehouse. And a city evaluation ranked it as in good to fair condition, but it needs a lot of maintenance. It should be able to, you know, continue to serve as the library for the next 1 to 5 years with major improvements.
So I apologize to all three of you. My producer told me that I dropped out there for a minute. So sorry if I left you guys hanging. I've been here the whole time, but see, this is what happens, not just when we're live, but when we broadcast remotely. And I have a feeling my kids are on the Xbox and they're not supposed to be. So my apologies to all of you on that. Margaret, before we wrap up, I do want to quickly also have you talk about this idea about new city council, like voting districts. This is something that the legislature talked about this.
Yes. So the legislature passed a law earlier this year that requires any city in Idaho over 100,000 people, which includes Boise and Meridian, to elect their city council by districts, which means your city council will be someone that lives in your area of the city. And you can only vote for someone who lives in that area of the city. Now, Boise is kind of struggling to implement this. And I was able to learn this because I filed a records request for documents, emails, and memos related to the bill. And I found this memo that was marked, attorney-client privilege. I'm not sure how I got it, if it was a mistake part or what. But it popped up in my inbox and I read it and I reported on it. So that's how I got this information. And basically city lawyers were telling city council that there is a lot of issues because they're not sure exactly how to implement the law. Because does this mean that the city needs to have a special election, for everyone to be elected again by 2021? Okay. Because we have almost all of our city council members all live in the North End or the East End. So they would maybe be in the same district. The law is also silent on how lines are drawn. How do we actually draw these lines? Because, you don't want city council drawing the lines because then that creates a conflict of interest. And so the city lawyers were saying, hey, this could get political really fast. So we should try to find a way to hire an outside consultant or something like that to make these district maps. And that could cost over $30,000 to hire an outside lawyer and a demographer, I think that's how you say that word, to do the maps. And so this is kind of a whole can of worms they have to negotiate because the law was written without a ton of guidance on specifically how this would be implemented.
So this is really something to watch. I mean, those are interesting points that I don't think, I mean, I definitely had not had that on my radar. I want to thank all of you for coming in today, taking some time out of your Friday to talk with us. Our roundtable, Mike Sharp with Idaho News 6, Madeline Beck with Boise State Public Radio News, and Margaret Carmel, the Boise City Hall reporter with the Idaho Press. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You.
This is Idaho Matters.